Here we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We're here for you. We're all wired up and ready to go. What's your question for us today? What's on your mind? 303-713-8255. 303-713-8255. And in the mountains, welcome 970-457-1009. Ready to go for you. Don't forget about our website, championsofthepeople.com. You got lots of choices when you go there. Don't forget about our books. They're free. One book, Don't Get Hurt in the Same Accident Twice, once in the accident and again on the insurance claim. What are the myths in this business? What are the myths and facts if you've been injured? You need to know. It's in that book. Our other book, Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run, the definitive guideline on hit and run and uninsured incidents, uninsured motorist coverages, uninsured motorist claims, and the insurance coverage you need right now, today, to protect yourself before an accident happens or a hit and run happens or you're hit by an uninsured motorist. And they say, I'm sorry, I don't have any insurance. I'm sorry. Or they say, here's my insurance card, and you call up, and that was expired 2 months ago or 3 months ago. There's no insurance. What do you do? And by the way, what do you do when you have the first call with the insurance adjuster? Once you've been injured, you know what to say, what to do, you know what they can do, you know what the rights are. It's right there on our website, championsofthepeople.com, and a lot more. Yesterday we did a show that's going to air this weekend on various stations. It'll be airing in the mountains as well here in Denver. And so you can listen to it. You can listen to the podcasts on our website. We did a show on back injuries. If you don't know what a facet joint is, you better, and your attorney better. If you don't know what therapeutic or diagnostic injections are, you better. How do you prove your injury is neurologically derived instead of muscles? The insurance company thinks it was a muscle-related injury. They default to a computer to the category that gives them the least payout. And so how do you fight that? You need to know those things. Back injuries. A lot of car accidents, workers' comp, involve back injuries. Can be very serious. What's stenosis? What's degenerative disc disease? Hear that all the time. You need to know. Attorneys need to know the medicine. You can listen to our show, listen to our podcast, and if you miss it when it's aired on the various radio shows, you can go to our website and listen to the podcast, or you can watch any of our video casts as well. All right, right now we're going to talk to Martin about a settlement question. Good morning, Martin. Welcome to Bell and Pollock.
Good morning. Several weeks ago, I called and we talked about offer of settlement in personal injury cases.
Sure.
And what the purpose of offer settlements are brought forth, really to induce what settlements?
Yeah, they make it they up the ante if you don't settle or if you don't accept the settlement. So yeah.
Well, the thing is, what happens if you appeal though? For example, you go to court, you get a judgment, and you get walloped with a offer a settlement, and now you could be behind the eight ball because the judgment didn't exceed the offer a settlement. Therefore, you're now facing the possibility of paying the other person's costs and expense, attorney's fees, etc. Does that induce appeal?
You know, it can. It can induce an appeal on a number of levels. Number one, a party might file an appeal to see if they can negotiate the payment of costs, which quite often happens. An appeal will be filed. The other side calls up and says, if you dismiss your appeal, we won't go after our costs, and everybody goes on their merry way, and it's resolved. Sometimes you appeal to fight the costs themselves that have been awarded, or you say the offer of settlement, the statutory settlement offer, wasn't properly phrased or had too many conditions in it, and if that's so, then you turn around, you say that the statutory settlement offer has no effect, or you argue that certain of the costs aren't billable, that you shouldn't have to pay certain of those costs. A lot of it depends on exactly how the statutory settlement offer is phrased, and then from then on, you're dealing with the discretion of the court, so you have to be ready to deal with an appeal if that's what happens.
There's arguments on both sides, but the bottom line, let's use an example for everybody that doesn't understand this law. You have a lawsuit. Let's say you're injured. The insurance company won't pay you, so they force you to file a lawsuit. And by the way, then they call you greedy. you file a lawsuit, and let's say your medical bills are $20,000. That's just part of your damages. And the insurance company makes you a statutory offer of settlement. They have to do it the right way, of $15,000. So if you go to trial, and they force you to go to trial, and you don't beat their statutory offer of $15,000, then the injured victim can end up paying certain costs pursuant to the statute. So it puts a lot of pressure. So then Martin's question is, can you appeal that? How do you appeal it? Yes, you can. Brad went through a lot of the arguments, pro and con. It's a very complicated situation in statute, and that's how it breaks down.
What happens if if the injured party loses their appeal? Does that factor into the cost to the offer of settlement amounts?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
You're gonna get more costs.
You're gonna get more costs that way.
Yeah. You're gonna have
even
more
though
costs.
You're trying to you appeal, because now you're gonna get you're behind the eight ball, because now you face the possibility of paying their costs because your judgment didn't exceed it. But now you appeal it, but then you lose the appeal, and the cost of appeal on the other party's side is now factored into increases their offer of settlement.
Increases their offer of settlement. And by the way, so everybody understands, the jury, in all these jury trials, when you have an injured person, there's always insurance on the other side. The jury never hears about, doesn't know about the statutory offer of settlement. It's secret. The jury doesn't know the word insurance. You can't use the word insurance in jury trials. You can't bring it up. So the jury's sitting there making their best decision, honest people, good people trying to make their best decision, and the insurance company is hiding in the background. The jury doesn't know about them, and they don't know about the statutory offer of settlement or the amount.
And Martin, I want you to, you're making some good points here, because yes, that cost hangs over your head then, and it's meant to do that. It's meant to hang over your head to try and get the case resolved. Just yesterday I was talking to a defense attorney at a mediation, and she had pointed out that she had made an offer, a statutory settlement offer to our clients. And I told her, yeah, my clients are well aware of that, and they understand it, and they did understand it. I had some sophisticated clients. But as I pointed out to the defense attorney, I can't tell you how many times, Martin, regardless of even writing our clients' letters, explaining it, giving detailed explanations, how that falls on deaf ears. A lot of times they don't understand it, or they don't think about it. Here's a risk that I may have to pay somebody's costs sometimes in the future if something doesn't happen.
It's a very real risk.
It's a serious risk. It's a real risk. It's a serious risk. And it's like me telling you, Martin, that, you've got a chance that 6 or 9 months from now, you're going to owe somebody $25,000 or $30,000 if something doesn't happen.
The other side could be building up costs just to put the fear of God into you.
Oh, absolutely.
That offer a settlement.
Absolutely. And they know they're doing it in a way that they've upped the threshold to where you're going to have to pay it.
Let's get that picture clear. The insurance company lobbied for this statute. The statute's on the books. You can't mention insurance in trial. They're like a phantom, a ghost in the courtroom. You'll never see them. They made a statutory offer. The jury never knows about that or the amount. And then they hope that you come in under that statutory amount. Thanks for the call, Martin.
Okay, thank you.
Take care, man.
All right, the Bell and Pollack Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack, we're here for you. We are injury attorneys in our day lives, in our radio lives. It's right here. It's happening. Amanda will get to you. Tony will get to you. You can call us at 303-713-8255. The champions of the people. Welcome back. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack. Our law firm is Bell and Pollack. We have offices in Greenwood Village, Denver, Steamboat Springs. We do cases all over the state of Colorado. We represent injured victims. But right here, right now, we can answer your questions on any legal subject. 303-713-8255. Joining us live on the Bell and Pollack Show is Amanda. Good morning, Amanda.
Good morning.
What can we do for you, ma'am?
I have tenants, and they are breaking their lease with several months left on it, am I entitled to keep their security deposit?
Okay. You ask a question that's going to have a lot of different issues surrounding it. First of all, you said you had a lease. The lease doesn't allow them an out. They're not taking it through any kind of problems or anything in the lease that is allowing them to.
No, there are no problems at all. They just arbitrarily decided to go and buy a house and informed me they're moving out.
Okay. The second thing is you basically, to begin with, you have the right not only to keep the security deposit. I don't know if I would keep the security deposit necessarily to make up for lost income on the lease initially until I saw what condition they left the house in. I would make sure they understand that you're not giving them permission to leave and that you'll hold them responsible for the rest of the lease. But you have a duty to mitigate, which means that if they've given you notice, you've got to start reasonable measures to get that property released.
I probably will have a tenant in there, but, the fact is they're breaking their lease.
Well, right, Amanda, you're right. They're breaking their lease. And the fascinating part of the whole question to me is I see it time and time again. How and why do people think that, I don't want to do this obligation anymore. I'm going to go buy a house. I want to go do over here. I don't want to do this. So we're just leaving. So your rights are, assuming all the lease language is correct, that's the bottom line. But your rights are you can claim the lost rent if it takes you whatever 2 days or 10 days or 2 months to release it properly, reasonably. You're under duty, as Brad said, to engage in efforts to release it. But they're responsible for all your lease payments that you didn't get, all the rent payments you didn't get. And my next fascinating issue, Brad, and we've seen this many times, is the tenant always leaves and says, I'm not going to pay the last month rent or whatever, just take it on my security deposit, and you don't have to necessarily do that.
Yeah, I wouldn't agree with that. So, and that's one of the things that's going to happen is they're going to probably not pay you that last month's rent. So,
well, it's defined specifically in my lease that they are not to leave the last month's rent or leave the security deposit as the last month's rent.
Good job.
And that's a great lease. Now, also, in your lease, a lot of times there is stuff in the lease, I don't know if yours has it, where it talks about if you vacate early, and in addition to other expenses and you may be responsible for and lost rent you may be responsible for, you're responsible for $150 or $250 fee for having to relet the property. Because you're going to have to go through having to advertise it. You're going to have to go through having to vet new tenants. You're going to have to go through showing it. You're going to have to go through the requirements of doing all that.
Yes, and I am doing that, and I possibly do have a tenant, so I won't be out any rent, but can I keep their security deposit for breach of lease?
Okay, so if you've incurred any damages, if your tenant moves in the next minute and you don't have any lost rent, that's one thing. You can keep their security deposit for any money and damages you're out, and that includes damage to the property. That includes rent. You can do it. You don't have to do rent, but you can do it. You just got to give the proper notice. That's your answer.
But I want to go back to the major thing. Just because somebody breaches a lease doesn't mean you can keep their money. You must show damages resulting from the breach. Now, you might keep track of your time. You might be and keep track of your advertising expenses if you ran an ad. You keep track of those and assess that against the damage deposit. Make sure you follow, if you've got 30 days or 60 days to give notice and you give a detailed explanation and you refund the balance, even if you're fighting over some amount, make sure you do all that so you don't give yourself exposure. But the bottom line is just because they breached, no. You've got to show some damages resulting from and caused by that breach.
With an itemized accounting, for example, you didn't pay rent for 5 days. That's worth X dollars. Example. You left a hole in the wall. The repair costs are Y dollars. You put that in there. So, yes, and Brad's right, you have to have the damages. But, yes, you can do it. But you give them the notice under the statute and under your lease. And if you want us to look at your lease or whatever and give you further advice, we'll be glad to do so.
I think I will do that.
Okay. I'll tell you what, Amanda, I'm going to put you on hold. If you give Kevin your information, we'll call you this week, and we'll walk you right through it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. All right, we appreciate it. We're going to get to all of your calls. So the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We're here for you, 303-713-8255. We're going to talk to Tony from Colorado Springs. Good morning, Tony.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call this morning. You're very well appreciated, I tell you.
Thanks, Tom.
Hey, I got a situation here. I just found out that got some a lung disease, possibly caused by dust and other chemicals that I've worked with in the apartment industry for the last 15 years, around pool chemicals, around asbestos, things like that. And I'm a non-smoker, never smoked, don't do drugs, don't drink, none of that stuff. And I'm in pretty good shape for my age. I'm 60. But I find out that this could be, if not life-changing, it could be life-causing. And it's critical. And they're saying, yeah, you've got this lung disease, and it's usually caused by dust and particulates in the air. What do you do for a living? I told him, and he's like, man, that's like a direct cause. So my thinking is this. I'm thinking I'm going to have to get an attorney, but I don't want to waste a lot of time and money and effort. If it's not attainable to file a suit against the apartment places that I'm working to prove that, hey, I've got this because we don't have the proper mask or we don't have the proper training around asbestos or lead-based paint or whatever it may be. I wanted to get your opinion on
Okay, tell you what, you can in workers' comp, you can have one of two kinds of approaches, generally speaking. Either you have an acute injury, like you herniate a disc, bing, it happens, or you have an occupational disease that occurs over time, and yes, you can make a claim. Yes, you should consult with an attorney. The consultation is free. And workers' comp, most attorneys don't charge very much for workers' comp because the worker should benefit. But now, if you have a third party, that's kind of a complicated subject, but let's use an example. Let's say you have an on-the-job injury. Let's say you got the job injury by an occupational disease afflicted over time. There's apportionment issues. You might have worked for three employers or eight employers. But if it's inflicted by a third party, not your employer, the best example I can give you is if you're a delivery person on the job, you had a car crash, and now you're injured on the job, but the other person, the third person, caused the car crash. The third person is not connected to your employer. The third person is not connected to anybody. So you can have a claim for workers' comp and against the third party, both at the same time. That's so critical.
Yeah, there's no third parties. It's a direct property management company, you know, I work directly for.
Okay, and we can get into more detail. We're definitely going to be wanting to talk to you off the air. We can get into more detail, but here's the thing. This is something you're not going to spend a lot of money initially with this because you're going to get an attorney on a contingency basis, and there won't be a lot of money spent that way. As far as time, your time's not going to be that much either, really, to begin with. It's going to be more the attorney's time to investigate your claim, which it should be. The attorney should be doing it. When you sit down with the attorney, and we're happy to talk to you about it, there's going to be discussions about what kind of lung disease it is and how it can be related to your work and if you're getting it at work and how long you've been at work and if other people are there, if it's something the employer should know about. But basically, even if it's something the employer shouldn't know about, because it's without regard to fault, if working at your work exposed you to the particulates and the problems you have, and it's resulted in a lung disease, you have the right to compensation, and you should get that compensation. It's going to be very important for you in a lot of different ways, because as lung disease progresses, depending on what it can do for you, it can become disabling. And as you said, it can be
right. And he's saying it could be. It could, in certain situations, he told me it could definitely cause death out of the deal. You know,
yeah.
And I've been in the business for a lot of years, with only a few management companies because I've stayed at places a long time. But you know, a lot of these places, you know, they have you work on their pools. They don't have proper ventilation. They don't have venting. They don't have masks. They don't have And you're breathing in chlorine, you're breathing in, soda ash and, all kinds of different things. And we just found out this one property has asbestos on it, and I didn't know. I've been working in it for the last year.
Yeah, and all hinges around whether you did this on the job, sounds like you did. Yes, you can recover. It's sometimes very difficult, but it's possible. And and it shouldn't cost you much to find out, but it's all dependent. It hinges on a doctor's opinion. Usually a pulmonologist, so pulmonary specialist that says your lungs, in his or her opinion, it's this and this caused by this and this and this, and then you're off and running. But yes, you can. A complicated question. Do you mind if we take your information and give you a call this week?
Absolutely, and I've got an appointment with the pulmonary doctor on Monday, so then I can get some more details.
When you talk to that doctor, you start asking about, causation, doctor. I'm sitting here on the job, and all the things you talked about, soda ash and chlorine, etc., okay?
Right. Thank you, sir.
We're gonna give you a call next week, give Kevin your information. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, and we really appreciate all your calls, 303-713-8255. I'll tell you what. It doesn't get any better than this, and we're going to get to all your calls. Joseph will get to you after the break. Larry will get to you after the break. The champions of the people will be right back. Here we go, Bell and Pollock. Injury attorney is here for you to answer your question on any legal subject, anytime. 303-713-8255. Right now, Eric from Caitlin's. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How you doing today?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good.
What's cooking?
I got a couple specials to run by you guys for the week, actually for the next couple of weeks. Our breakfast special is going to be an open-faced breakfast sandwich. That's going to be two slices of whole grain toast. We're going to put fresh sliced avocado on top of that. We're going to top that with two eggs cooked to the temperature of your choice. You can get a side of hash browns only for a dollar more. That's going to be the breakfast special. Tastes really, really good. Our lunch special is going to be a burger special. We're actually doing what we call like a ranchero burger. We're taking a hamburger, and we're going to wrap it up in a flour tortilla. We're going to smother it in our homemade beans. You can get your choice of red or green chili topped over that. We're going to put lettuce, tomato on top of that. You can get our waffle fries or our homemade chips for a dollar more on that special. That's going to be our lunch special for the next couple of weeks. And don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, it's an all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet. It's all you can eat. It's only $7.99. That actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. You just can't beat that. And we got bottomless mimosas and umbrellas. It's going to be hot, so come on down. Get a crap of mimosas. Relax. Bring the dog. Bring the kids. Hang out on the patio. Have a great time down at Caitlin's Restaurant.
Eric, you put pork in any of your green chili. What's the status there?
Absolutely not. Most people do. We do use a chicken base in our green chili, but there is no pork in it. So if you're looking for a vegetarian sauce, both of the red and the green are both that way. You don't have to worry about that at all. Absolutely.
Hey, Eric, do you have Bananas Foster's pancakes?
I do. In fact, I made up the sauce for it this morning, so it's ready to go. We got buttermilk pancakes. They are made from scratch. You can do the Bananas Foster's glaze over that. We have cheesecake pancakes. We have banana pancakes. We have peanut butter chocolate chip pancakes, all scratch made. Just can't beat it. If you can find it and bring it to me, that'll beat me. I'd love to see it.
I don't think that's fair. I'm not going to talk to you anymore. Where are you located, Eric?
I'm 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of the Colorado Boulevard, and that's in the Glendale Shopping Center.
Rock and roll. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good one, Eric.
You too.
All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Listen to our Sunday shows, our Saturday shows, our shows in the mountains, various radio stations. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. A lot of information there. championsofthepeople.com. We're talking to Joe from Colorado Springs. Good morning, Joe. Welcome to Bell and Pollock.
Hey, good morning. Thanks, guys, for having me. Really appreciate it.
Sure. What's going on?
What can I do for you?
Well, I had a question for you. I want to tell you a little bit of my background so you understand. I'm a disabled veteran from the Iraq War. I got out of the Army in 2012, and I'm a father. I'm a father of two beautiful children. One of them is 8 years old, who lives in Texas with her mother. And then I have a 15-year-old here in Colorado Springs who lives with her mother. Now, when I got back from Iraq, I had symptoms of PTSD. And, it really weighed on my mental health. And my baby mothers have been using that as an excuse to keep my children from me. And I've been trying to fight it, but I haven't really had any success, and I have a divorce decree from my oldest child. Well, she stopped contact with me and has been missing for almost 2 years now, in violation of a divorce decree. And her excuse, according to, because she talks to my other daughter's mother, is because of my PTSD symptoms. And I guess apparently they're using it as an excuse to really not feel safe. So I was kind of wondering what could be done, because there's really no agency that enforces custody. And I've been trying to find her, but I just don't know how to take care of that kind of situation.
Well, first of all, thank you for your service in Iraq. We love veterans. If you know Bellen Pollock, you know that. But if you don't know that, you know it now. So thank you very much for that. And Brad, what do you think
about his?
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, you know, this starts with having to look at your divorce decrees. You said it sounds like one of your divorces took place in Texas.
Correct.
And that's with your oldest child, correct?
Yes.
And then you have a second child with another woman. Were you married at the time, or is that without a marriage, or what's the situation on that?
No, we were living together, and she got pregnant right around the time that we broke up.
When you broke up,
I wasn't a part of the pregnancy, and the moment the child was born, she filed for child support, and I filed for visitations. But I think due to the Violence Against Women's Act, she's just able to say she doesn't trust me or she's scared of me, and I haven't been able to get an overnight due to her age.
Well, what's going to have to happen on that, Joseph, is we're going to have to go through and look at what the doctors are saying about your PTSD. Obviously, the primary concern of any court, listen, there's a lot of veterans that have PTSD and are suffering for certain symptoms of PTSD that still get to see their children, still are good parents, still have the right to be around their kids, and there's no reason why you shouldn't be one of them if your symptoms or if your condition is under control. PTSD can have some significant things and some significant symptoms, and then again, they can be symptoms that you have very much under control, you're getting treated for. The big part about PTSD, as you know, is because one of the symptoms is irritability and angry outbursts. And so, you know, they're always saying, well, how can the child be protected if that's happening? But if you're taking care of yourself and if you've got that under control, then there's no reason you can't exercise your parenting. As to the mother who's violating a court order, that's all she's doing. If there's
Period.
A court order in Texas that you're entitled to have parenting, then she's violating the court order. She's in contempt of court. The only way she can modify that court order is going back into court and getting a modification where they would have to show that you have PTSD, and that creates a danger to the child. If it doesn't create a danger to the child, then there's no reason to keep you from seeing your child.
So the bottom line is there's a court order, as Brad just said, it's in your favor. They have to change it. You have the right to enforce it. It is contempt of court, period, paragraph. We're done with that part. And there are no administrative agencies that are probably going to go forward for you. So the answer is you got to go to court. You got to go to court in the jurisdiction it happened. That one we were talking about, Texas. But I got to tell you, thank you for calling, because PTSD is real. And it happens from events that are life-changing, and you can have nightmares, flashbacks, anger moments, a lot of them, irritability, a lot of them. And they can happen from the military. They can happen from a car accident. It sounds like an explosion, then you relive it, and the insurance companies say PTSD, basically, you know, what's your problem? Suck it up. Heard that before.
So I think yeah. we need to get your number. I want to look at the divorce decree from Texas and see what that says, and see what kind of help we can get you with that one, so you can start seeing your child again there. And as to here, mm-hmm. If something was filed to get child support from you, then that's a juvenile case that's probably open. It's not a divorce case, a DR, dissolution, or a regular civil case. It's a juvenile case. And what we'll have to do there is go to the court in the juvenile case and in that court where it's pending and ask them for some parenting. And like I said, the only thing we've got to do is just make sure your doctors that are treating you for the PTSD say you're safe to have time periods with the child. And that's all we have to do.
Well, here's been the big pickle. Is that I do see a therapist at the VA, and you're absolutely right. My irritability has been one of the main reasons my relationship didn't work.
Right.
But the VA knows and has documented. I was on we're unable to work and having trouble keeping work. So that's been a real problem financially, because everyone I've talked to said, first, I'm going to have to get a private investigator to even locate the other party in Texas.
Well, yeah,
the finances have been really weighing me down.
That may be necessary.
Now, with two child support and not being able to find work, it's been a real problem for me.
And it's hard for me to understand why there may be a need for a private investigator if in fact you've been paying child support, or if the money's being paid. There's a family registry somewhere in Texas of some type that knows where your ex is, because they're going to send her money, and they need to know where to send the money.
They told me that it doesn't have to be that way necessarily, because she can have it routed just to her bank account without having the physical address be present.
Well, just because it doesn't have to be that way necessarily doesn't mean that's the way it is.
And that's correct. But if it's going to a bank, then that's another place where you can start to get information about the location of the person.
Joseph, you've got rights. Okay. You've got rights, buddy. Thank you for your service. And I tell you what, we're going to try to help you. But there's a way to track it. It's like the old Watergate thing, follow the money. And so we're going to take your information. We'll give you some help, okay?
Hey, thanks, guys, for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
We'll call you.
You're more than welcome. Yes. Joseph, thank you very much. 303-713-8255. Larry, we're going to get to you. We're going to get to all of your calls. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We are our injury attorneys in our day lives and our radio lives. Guess what? We're right here for you, and we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Don't forget about our shows. We're going to air Sunday morning, and they air in the mountains as well on Saturdays and Sundays. Many different stations. If you want to know which ones, just go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. If you want any of our books free, just call right here at the studio, speak to Kevin, give him the information. We'll send you a hard copy. If you want to download a free e-copy, just go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Yesterday, we did a show that's going to air on back injuries. You need to know about back injuries. It's more than just a sore back. It could be neurologically derived. It could be a herniated disc. It could be a bulging disc. It could be nerve involvement down your legs. Low back injury. It could be facet joints. You need to know, and your attorney needs to know. Simple. You need to know. And you need a legal game plan, and you can get one at Bell and Pollock. And don't forget the show that follows us, the Barry and Larry Consumer Real Estate Show. They're realtors, brokers, very professional people. You want to have a question on real estate, you call them at any time, and we're glad to refer you to them. So the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, we're going to talk to Larry live right now, lost some money on investment. Larry, how you doing? You're from Georgia, right?
I sure am. Let me say that I'm a frequent listener and occasional caller. And thank you so much. Here's the background. I'm a senior of 6 or 7 years young. Last year, I'm also a conservative investor. I have some assets. Last year, my investor encouraged me to invest in a oil and gas investment. The investment sank. I lost a lot of money. Currently, I feel that this is not a suitable investment for me, given my conservative investment philosophy or approach and my age. I just wonder if I have any legal standards to get any kind of reconsideration, and if, you know, if I can use the argument of my advisor's failure to direct me to a suitable investment and her fiduciary obligations. I asked someone else about that. I asked another financial planner about this, and he said I didn't have a chance in hell. But I want to ask you guys for a second opinion.
Well, you know, the first question I've got is, your advisor, your financial advisor, what kind of disclosure and what kind of information was your financial advisor giving you? First of all, your financial advisor recommended the investment?
Yes.
And actually steers you towards it? Was the facilitating reason or cause for you to go into the investment?
Yes.
All right, and then the next question is can you pinpoint anything the financial advisor should have told you that did not, or, and it sounds like your financial advisor is a woman?
Yes.
Okay, that she should have told you but did not, or anything that she didn't tell you that she or misled you in any way?
Good question. It wasn't a situation of being black or white. I would have to, I'm kind of stuttering here because I'm not sure what to say. It wasn't black and white. She did give me information about the investment. I had an idea what it was, but perhaps I would argue that, even if I have this information, given my age, suitability, and maybe given my desire for a conservative investment approach.
Larry, the bottom line to me is this: investment advisors obviously are not absolute guarantors of results. However, if they make misrepresentations or mislead you in any way, or mislead you on the investment, that can be. It's not automatic, but it can be actionable. It can be a legal basis for a legal claim. But
okay.
Investment advisors also, or investment people, also have to engage in reasonable, prudent actions and make reasonable, prudent decisions. And so, there's a way to look at this, but it's really, really fact-driven. That's what attorneys call it, fact-driven. This is a fact-driven situation, a fact-driven question, and, that's the basis to start with on the analysis.
And that's what I was trying to get into. And it's... They can be held liable for negligent advice. All right. Now you probably signed more disclosures than than you can believe, and we'd have to see them about you're making the decision and they're not responsible for anything they tell you. But the courts have found that financial advisors are liable for losses arising from an unsuccessful investment that's undertaken in reliance on advice given to a client. If it's negligent, if it's not properly founded or based, and they're giving you the wrong advice, yes, that's why I was talking about did this financial advisor, if all the pieces come together and you can say, look, you were just negligent in advising me to do this, then they don't guarantee performance, but they certainly have to give you the proper and standard of the industry advice.
And in this area of law, there's not what we call as attorneys, there's no bright line rule. There's no line in the sand that you can say if you cross it one way, you get a result of X, and you cross it the other way, you get a result of Y. However, if the investment advisor or financial advisor can prove that they're taking reasonable, prudent actions that a reasonable financial advisor would take, then that's one thing that probably get a good defense. If you invested your money to be safe, and they either recommended to you or performed on you, let's use an extreme example, and they invested your money in bonds from a Colombian company, that's probably not reasonable, not prudent. And if they say, "Well, no, I used all blue chip stocks. I was on the Dow Industrials. I was on the S&P 500, and I invested just because it went south, just because it ended up." Wrong. That doesn't mean I did anything wrong. So those are two extremes, but somewhere in the middle is the answer, and it's a fact-driven event.
Guys, let me ask a fast question. Good advice. I wonder, in a case like this, would the burden of proof be on me, or would it be on the financial advisor?
As far as if you're claiming the financial advisor was negligent and caused the losses, you're going to have the burden of proof to begin with. To show what was given to you and how that was faulty or negligent advice. Okay? The financial advisor may at some point have to show why that advice was not negligent, but the burden of proof, the person who's going to have to carry the day is going to be you to show it. And that's going to be a big thing. They're also going to look into your sophistication. Larry. They're going to want to know how sophisticated you are. If you're a rookie or if you're somebody who should have known better on even what the financial advisor is telling.
And that's what the SEC calls an accredited investor. An accredited investor, you have to be qualified. You don't have to be qualified in many, many circumstances. And by the way, all you financial gurus out there, the SEC has changed the rule it's about to implement that you don't have to be an accredited investor for certain things. I just thought I'd throw that in. Larry, we answering your questions?
Guys, always, always great advice. Thank you so much.
Hey, Larry, I got to ask you, where in Georgia are you located?
I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. As a matter of fact, I plan on taking a mini vacation to Denver in September. But when I ask you guys, I don't know how well you know Denver, but are there any drop-dead places, restaurants you can recommend where only the locals go?
Well, we'll get you off the air, but we sure appreciate you bringing that Georgia money to Colorado.
Well,
all right. Well,
Larry,
I'll put you on hold.
Caitlin's might be a good one.
Exactly. I'll put you on hold. All right. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Guess what? We're here for you. We are injury attorneys in our day lives, our radio lives. We bring you this show. We're glad to do it. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. It's an information-littered website. I've said that a million times. If you want any of our free books, just email us, call us, we'll send them to you. If you want a free accident assistance packet that goes in your glove box, free, we'll be glad to do that. And as I say almost every week, not quite every week, if you want a copy of my own personal deck sheet to see what car insurance coverages I have, I'll be glad to do it. And many people ask me, and I comply, and I send them my copy. If you've got questions on insurance, you can call us and ask us anytime. Bell and Pollock, champions of the people. We'll see you next week.